digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
Today, something a little bit different. Kevin Gallagher is going to be interviewed on this program, Digging Dirt, by my good friend and compadre, Pete Stewart. I'm going to turn the tables and talk about my garden today.
Interesting, because I have observed when you're talking to other people, I can tell you sometimes you're just burning up to like go off and start talking about your garden, but you want to give the guests there do.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about me.
So my first question is, how does your garden grow?
Well, you know, it's all about the soil. It's the one thing I've learned. One thing that digging in the dirt has taught me is that you, just like Brian O'Hara from upstate Connecticut, he's a master garden farmer. And he said, you know, whatever you can put into your soil is going to pay off dividends later. And I've really taken that to heart. So I have compost. I have worms in the basement where I get some, you know, vermicomposting going on. And I put that in there. And I also, do some things to the soil over the winter, like cover crop, you know. Uh-huh. We can talk a little bit more about that. But I put in winter rye and legumes and stuff like that. You can buy those mixes online. And they're really beautiful during the winter. They actually love the cold weather. And you can see green out there in your garden, you know, and they're feeding
the, nice too, right?
Yeah, and they're feeding the soil, you know, which is nice. And you let them grow all the way into the spring, and then when you cut them down, they become cover for to keep the weeds down. And it's all about not disturbing the soil, is what I've learned from all of the experts I've had on, where, you know, there's lots of that hyphae in the little tendrils that go through all the garden, and they're actually like sort of communicating with each other, and they're telling the plants and the bugs and stuff, I need calcium or I need this, and if you disturb that, you kill that off, that communication. And I really believe that now, because my garden has really blossomed with it. All my produce is really tastier, and I'm getting bigger and better yields out of it.
Yeah. So since you've started doing digging in the dirt, you've really been tapping into some pretty significant experts, and they've produced results.
Yeah, they've taught me a lot of stuff. You know, in fact, I look at it, I ask questions related. Sometimes the questions are totally about me. Uh-huh. You know, I'm saying, like, I got this issue. Uh-huh. You know, and they teach me some stuff. You know, and I have to say also, I've learned a lot from YouTube. YouTube has turned into this incredible do-it-yourself source. And if you go on YouTube and you put in, like the other day, I put in pruning, and I'm watching a lot of pruning videos, and you start to get an idea of what is true and what's not true, or you get the idea of the guy or a lot of women on YouTube doing their thing, which I love, listening to what they have to say about like pruning tomato plants. So now this year I prune like a banshee, you know.
Really?
I've changed my habits totally, and I've noticed a big difference in the plants and
because they're stronger.
Yeah, you know, as soon as they start developing problems in the leaves, you know, leaves can tell you a lot about disease, you know, or you get yellow spots and everything. Those go right away, you know. And I saw one video of these two ladies out west somewhere. They grow a lot of tomatoes, obviously, all the time. And they have a 12-leaf count. They start at the top. They don't count the top one. Then they count 12 leaves down. Everything below 12 leaves comes off.
Really?
Everything. Wow. And I like that, because now I'm getting, you know, you don't need all those leaves, and the air around the plants helps them keep away from the disease. There's when they're claustrophobic and they're touching each other and everything, they can pass the disease between them. And when you're spraying, when you're watering, the water splashes up. That also gets the diseases that you may have in the soil and splash up on the leaves. Now, yeah, I got to say that I'm no expert. This is all trial and error, and years and years and years and years of growing tomatoes, but I only feel like I've came into my own in the last couple of years, mainly because of this program, Digging in the Dirt, and I keep going at it and changing some things, you know, and have some really good results.
So give us a sense of the size of your garden.
It's a 20 by 20 plot in the backyard. I'm in suburbia. So my whole garden, my whole backyard now is either brick porch, and I have very little space left. Now we're going to go to a little walkway and get rid of any grass that we have. We're just finished with grass because we don't spray anything. You know, we're all organic in the yard. It shows my lawn's different than my neighbor's lawn. And I don't want to spray things because it's my grandson, and I don't want to spray things because I'm eating what right next to where you would be spraying. So I have a 20-20 plot, and then I have two by four beds right next to the 20, and then another 2x6 plot. I used to have a potato thing, but I got rid of potatoes. Too many problems. Potatoes and tomatoes don't get along.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Potatoes can give disease to tomatoes. Potatoes get diseases really easily. So you either going to grow potatoes maybe in sacks somewhere else, but don't grow them next to your tomatoes. It's not a good idea. It just causes issues. So I got rid of those and put in another raised bed.
And you're very driven by the tomato thing, I can tell.
Yeah, I am. I'm an Irishman. I love potatoes as well. You know, and when I first grew potatoes, it was ecstatic. Here's all these potatoes. I loved them. You know, it was like little fresh potatoes. But I'll pass on the potatoes to have better tomatoes because you can't get tomatoes any other time than when you grow them in your backyard. That tastes good.
Yeah. I mean, store-bought potatoes may not be the best, but
because they spray them a lot,
there's not a universe of difference between those and
what you grow.
But in the tomato world, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's really huge. My kids go, they won't eat tomatoes. The only ones that I eat during the winter are the small little round golf ball sized Camparis from Costco.
Yeah, I eat grape tomatoes in the winter.
And grape tomatoes too. But they also have to be augmented with a little vinegar or something like that, a little salt, and they start to pop out. A fresh tomato from your garden, you can eat it. You don't need tomato. You don't need vinegar. No. You don't need salt. You know, there's nothing like it, you know.
Yeah. So.
And I grow mostly big slicers because that's what we like.
And how many different varieties of tomatoes
do you have? I have like 24 plants this year between the raised beds, you know, and the 16 plants in the main 20x20. And I have 13 different ones this year. Usually I used to do a lot.
13 varieties
of tomato. Yeah. I used to grow mainly. I like Belgian Giants, my favorite heirloom. They're big slicers. They're really tasty. They give incredible fruit. I love them to death. So I grow I have six of those in there now, and they're producing. I gave you one of them. One of those is a Belgian Giant, or a Giant Belgian sometimes it's known as, according to Craig LeHuyer, my tomato guest I had on. But I also have Cherokee Purples. I have Black Crim. I have Black Cherry Tomatoes. I brought those for you today. I have a new one I never tried before called Green Zebra. They sort of have green stripes. The zebras are, there's a lot of them. There's orange and red and green. There's some kind of heirloom hybrid. And then I have Shinnecock Currants, which I got from Steph over at the Invincible Summer Farms. She gave me the seeds for those.
And those are tomatoes?
They're tomatoes, but they're a really tiny little tomato they call a currant. They're so tiny. But when you pop
currants
those,
and tomatoes aren't related.
No, they're not. The currant is like a raisin.
Right.
But they call these a currant style. It's tiny. Boy, right. And it has flavor like you can't believe.
When that's cool. I've never seen anything like that.
Oh, I'll bring some in. They're amazing. I just grow them, and so when I'm working in the garden, I eat them there. You know, they're just so delicious, you know. Or I dry them. I have a dryer now, so you can have dried, you know, cherry tomatoes or dried currant tomatoes all winter long. Which I just used up my last bag and some sauce from last year. I also, and I'm not a snob about heirlooms. I don't mind growing some of these hybrids, you know, because you know I find people really like them. You know, like I don't have sun golds this year, which Johnny Corvino loves. He loves his sun golds, but I have a yellow. It's called a solid gold grape tomato. That's pretty interesting, and it's really prolific. I mean, it's producing a lot already, and I'll tell you why. I have the Better Boy, which is another hybrid. I have a Coyote Currant, which is a little yellow currant, which is not sweet. It has a musky taste to it, so it's a really different kind of tasting tomato. Then I have Walter's Fancy, which Craig LeHuyer gave me the plant. When I went to a wedding in North Carolina, I took a trip for 45 minutes to his house to see his tomato operation.
Uh-huh.
And he was pretty cool, and he gave me a pepper plant and a couple tomato plants. This tomato plant is some kind of cross that he did, and he named it after his father, Walter, and it's coming up. It looks dark green, and it looks like a bird sat on the tomato cage and pooped all over the leaves. It's got little like white splotches, but it's actually the plant.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really a different plant. I can't wait to see what the fruit is. You know, it's the first time I ever grew that. Then I have another one that's sort of a standard. It's called Mountain Magic. That's an heirloom, but it's double the size of a golf ball. And then I have the Big Beef, which is a hybrid. Everybody grows Big Beefs. And then I have another one, which is sort of like a zebra, and that's a pineapple. It's called pineapple. And wow. That's very mushy, but very sweet.
It's a lot of tomatoes.
What
was that guy, Craig?
Craig LeHuyer.
And his book is?
Epic Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's really a great book.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy.
And it was funny to hear you guys talk because you shared enthusiasm, and he was so happy to be talking to somebody who had the same kind of like passion
right.
for tomatoes.
We were kindred spirits for sure.
Tomato heads.
Yeah, exactly. And he grows all his in the driveway, which I could never do.
Is that right?
Yeah, he does not grow any in a garden ground. He has them in bags.
Containers?
Big black bags. And he grows a lot of them. He had 1,500 at one time. When we were there, he had about 400 tomatoes in the driveway.
Wow.
Yeah. But I have to say, I feed mine better. I'm organic completely. And he was using Miracle-Gro, and I was a little disappointed in the boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then to finish off the garden, I have like three tomatillo plants because I like making the green sauce for enchiladas. I have two eggplants, the big, you know, the big purple ones. And I have eight pepper plants. Like my wife likes piquillo peppers, which is a Spanish pepper. So I ordered those and I've not had success. I'm hoping this year to have success. I have green peppers. I have shishito, the ones you stir fry now. Everybody's doing that in restaurants. And I have these gemstone that Craig LeHuyer gave me. They're hot peppers. They're tiny little things, but they're really hot. Then I have zucchinis and string beans and beets. And then the final thing that's going on now is squash. I don't grow squash usually because it grows all over the yard and takes over the yard, and I don't have the room. So this year I bought a trellis. I bought a squash trellis, which is this big like archway. And I'm training the squash to go up on it, and I'm halfway there now, and I can't wait to see what happens, you know. So we'll have to...
Talk about tomatillos a little bit, because it's something I don't know very much about. It's like one of those vegetables I see in the supermarket, and I'd like to get that, but I don't know
what to
do with it.
It's like you see cactus in the store, right?
What
do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, it's a tomato family. It's very much like a green tomato, but it's got a lemony taste. If you bite into it, it's like lemony. It has a lemon taste. And what I do with them is, you know, I have a little basket for the barbecue grill, you know, the metal basket.
Yeah.
And I just char them in there.
Oh.
Until they get brown around. Then I throw them into a blender with, you know, and then I can throw in some peppers, that your favorite peppers, green peppers, and make yourself a nice green sauce.
They're not hot on their own.
They're not hot at all.
Yeah.
They're really tasty. You get a nice little green tasting lemony sauce, you know, especially it depends on your pepper. If you want it hot, put in hot peppers. But you could put in shishito peppers with the tomatillos and it would be awesome sauce for, you know, cheese enchiladas or something like that. You know, really great. It's a really great sauce. And I'll tell you, tomatillos are prolific. You want to stop with the tomatillos. It's like zucchinis, right? Too many zucchinis.
Yeah. Yeah, the zucchini thing but great to be the friend of the gardener.
No, that's right. Right now I am having an unbelievable cucumber year. I've pulled 60 cucumbers out of my garden already.
Yeah.
So my neighbors are up to their ears in cucumbers. You know, relatives, everybody's got – you got a cucumber today.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely something that's – and I have lots of herbs, you know, a lot of basil.
Yeah.
A lot of that kind of stuff, you know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you preserve stuff? You said you had a dryer.
Yeah, I have a dryer. That's – or I freeze it.
Uh-huh.
I would love. I want to get a guest on Digging in the Dirt that talks about canning and everything. You know, I think that's probably some of the problem is waste. You know, if you tend to grow a lot of stuff, you can waste it really quick. Now in August coming up here, I'm going to have a lot of tomatoes, and I got to either start cooking it down and making a nice little sauce, or start really eating them or giving them away. You know, because there'll be excess. You know, so I freeze a lot of sauce. You know, and I don't grow sauce tomatoes. Next year, I've decided to grow 4 or 5 sauce tomatoes, you know, the kind the Italians use, because they have less water, no seeds, right now, most of mine are slicers and stuff like that. So because I just love sliced tomatoes. You know, we have tomatoes Provençal. You know, we have tomatoes dried. We have tomatoes sliced. We have tomatoes sandwiches. You know, I feel like Forrest Gump, you know.
That's one of the, I think one of the great summer foods is like tomato, well, tomato mutz, you could, is great.
Yep.
And then maybe a little basil, salt and pepper, maybe a little mayo. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that.
Yeah.
That is like a
great. Our favorite is tomato cheese sandwich. And we take, I get sliced,
any kind of
sliced
cheese,
cheddar right? cheese, really thin. And I butter the toast, butter it with a little bit of mayo, put a huge slab, like an inch thick of tomato, a little more mayo, salt, and then lay three or four pieces of cheese on the top and broil it. And oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That is good. We'll have two or three of those for dinner and that's it. You know, it's freaking awesome. BLTs, because I'm not a vegetarian. Those are great too. Tomatoes Provençal, chopped garlic and herbs on the top of a sliced open tomato, basically, especially the smaller ones. I'll put them in a pan with a lot of really good olive oil and just cook them down.
Oh, yeah.
Cook them down till they're almost destroyed, and they're so tasty. Man.
Yeah.
They just lose all their water, and they're just this massive wonderfulness.
So what kind of you have about a 20 by 20 garden. Mm-hmm. What's your light conditions?
Light, I'm pretty much, it varies because I have a big hedge in the back, you know, because I pace a park. So I have to have a hedge for privacy. And it comes up over the hedge around 8 a.m. and then it hits the house around 3 or 4. And the backside gets sun longer as the house sun goes over. So I'm getting about 5, 6 hours, 8 hours sometimes, you know, the height of the season, I guess. So I get plenty, you know. You only need about 5 or 6 hours.
Is that a big factor on how you plant things, like where?
Yeah, you're right. Good question. I put all my cherry tomatoes, any of the small tomatoes, the currants and the cherry tomatoes, because they are basically weeds with fruit. And they'll grow no matter what you do to them.
Really?
Yeah. So I try to favor my slicers, the big stuff, in sunnier spots, and I know the other ones will survive no matter what. They'll crawl, you know, like they twine themselves out and go outside the netting, you know. That's something we should tell them what I do too with that, the netting.
Yeah.
I cannot share well. I share with my neighbors and my fellow DJs, but I'm not sharing with squirrels and birds and whatever else. Raccoons come around at night too. I've had that attack, but I've not had that problem. This year, I've no pests around. The squirrels have given up and gone and moved somewhere else.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, because I have PVC piping that is quite tall. It's about 12 feet. It's a big arch, and I cover that with netting. And then the side ones, now I actually drape over that too. And I have a PVC trellis across there, and I string up the tomatoes on that. Because you want to keep the tomatoes going up straight and not sagging from their weight of the fruit.
Right.
And pinching off the nutrition coming out of the ground up into the plant. So the best thing is to keep them as straight as possible, tied up as best as possible to stakes and tomato cages. And I found that the string, the reason why all the greenhouses do it is because that works the best. You know, you just go out there in the morning and intertwine the tomato to the string and let it grow up the string. So this is, you know, stuff from hanging out with farmers and stuff like that. These are the tricks of the trade, you know, that I found work really well.
And the string is just free hanging from the top of your garden structure?
It's not free hanging. You know, I just wind it onto the top of the structure, and then come down and tie it to a cage and make it taut. And then as I keep everything tied heavily to the stakes I have in the cage. I have cages and stakes. And then as when it gets up to higher, when you're starting to go into the 7, 8, 9 foot level, you really got to twine it into the string to get to go further. And my goal this year was to have more more yield, higher yields, and longer yield. I wanted to have a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, when everything was if everybody remembers, it was cold this year. It was really cold and rainy. And one thing I learned from these guys I've been interviewing here is that tomatoes don't like cold. They want warm ground. So what I did was I put 6 of them in the raised beds. So I have 6 of them out there in raised beds and herbs at the bottom and everything. But I put a plastic tunnel over the top of them. I have these bendable metal strips that you can put over that.
Yeah.
Then I put the plastic I had some in the garage, so I put that over the top of it, and I made a little greenhouse. And I can't believe the difference. I am eating tomatoes a month early because I started mine in a tunnel. So if you've ever thought about it, you should definitely try starting some of your tomato plants. And then the ones I started a month later in the garden are just coming in now, and the other ones have been fruiting for about a month. So
that'll be great, right?
Yeah, it gives you longer time to enjoy tomatoes rather than just August.
Right.
You know, and green tomatoes in September, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely important to you know, try to get more yield if you're going to do this, if you're into it, you know.
So the garden is fully enclosed.
Yeah, with netting.
With netting. I mean, yeah.
I have my little entrance there with some clips that I get in and out. And
got it. Yeah. Probably and, got his, like, the guard shack there.
Yeah. And also I have drip irrigation, which is really helpful, but I still water, especially in these hot days. I'll go out in there in the morning, and it takes about 10, 15 minutes. I like to try to get out the garden before I go to work for a few minutes.
Water every day.
I water in the hot days. They like water because you're trying to get a large fruit.
Yeah.
They need water, you know, and they need nutrition. So I feed about every 2 weeks. And I spray Quantum Lights, this product that I have. I spray that a lot because that has a photosynthetic probiotic in it that transfers light into nitrogen to the plant.
Now you spray on the leaves.
I spray right on the leaves. And I also use Neptune's Harvest Fish and Kelp Fertilizer with Quantum Total, which is the name of it. It's also probiotics with some humates, and I give that about every 2 weeks or I'll switch out the fish and kelp and put some of my worm poop from the basement. You know, I have a lot of worm. I have a lot of worm. Kevin's crap, which you also received a present today.
Right.
When I give it to my friends, I call it Kevin's crap. So.
Yeah. So.
They're prolific, those worms. I love them.
That's great. So that's all under controlled circumstances in the basement.
Yeah, the worms.
Right.
Yeah. I had them outside in my compost bin. They took over. I mean, they were multiplied like you couldn't believe and really accelerated the compost process. But in the summer, I have those tumblers, which are not the best I found. Uh-huh. Tumblers are not the best compost situation.
Right.
But they do work if you keep on top of them, keep spinning them, and they keep adding materials, you know, wet and dry and green and brown. You know, there's all kinds of rules. Go to YouTube if you want to learn how to do that. And or listen to my podcast with Rhonda Sherman. She's the worm expert. Uh-huh. But, you know, I took them all out at the summer because this summer would have killed them.
Because
it would just, they would just cook them.
Yeah.
So I took them to the basement and threw them into my worm tower, and they're loving it down there. They're making me a lot of worm poop. It's really great. You know, yesterday I spent the whole day, not the whole day, about an hour cleaning out the. I do it so I force them out of the different levels. You put food at the lower levels. For me, some people do it the opposite, but I put food in the lower levels and then turn a light on, open the top of it and turn a light on, and they just flee.
They go
down and find the food, and that leaves the top basically empty.
Uh-huh.
So you cull it, you go through it, you pull out any worms, the stragglers, you know, and then you've got Kevin's crap.
So you're getting new mulch material all the time, really.
Well, you know, I started off with coconut coir and some shredded paper. I have shredded paper. I have a shredder. I got it just so I shred my New York Times. I shred all my any document that doesn't have plastic in it, you know, and I'll use that. And you wet down the coir, and you take the coir and you mix it with some paper because you don't want too much water in your worm towers. And then you add the worms into it, and then you get some kitchen scraps, and I put it into the food processor because it's all about decomposing, you know, and they can decompose just about anything. They can't really forget about eggshells. I'm not a big eggshell fan because they just don't break down quick enough. They take years to break down.
Yeah.
Better to use bone meal if you're looking for calcium for your soil, in my opinion. But, you know, the worms will break down anything. And then when you're finally finished, it's this loamy, beautiful soil. You go, I was showing my wife, look at this. She says, Kevin, it's crap. You know? It's wonderful. Look at this. These worms did this. They made it into this incredible black gold. You know, it's really, really beautiful stuff. And we put it on everything, and the plants just respond. You know, That's what I'll do now is when fall comes, because I have a lot of, I'll leave the tomato plants in. I'll let them keep feeding the soil with their, they take stuff from the sun and they feed the soil as does some of the other stuff I have. Like I have straw as a cover crop. And then when the fall will come, I'll basically sow in a winter rye and all that kind of stuff to get my cover crop going. And I'll also add this product I like from Michael Estera's soilminerals.com. He has an incredibly complex fertilizer, which takes very little of it. And I put a cup of that in at the end of the season and spread it all over, just sort of broadcast it over the top and put some into the raised beds. And then that you now are setting up your soil for the next year, because you're not supposed to grow the same stuff every year in the same spot. But we have problems in suburbia, so you got to replenish the soil. And that comes through compost and worm poop and good fertilizers like this soilminerals.com's fertilizer that's, I think it's just fabulous. It's got everything in there, like trace minerals and manganese and basalt and things like that. So it's worth checking out if somebody's looking to improve their garden soil, which is the secret to high yields and quality food.
So if you're amending the soil, you don't have to worry too much about crop rotation.
No, I don't. I'm not finding it. I'm sure I have problems. I noticed, you get a little, there's fusarium wilt, which is a disease, where all of a sudden the plant just wilts, looks like it's out of water. Uh-huh. I have one of those this year, and I'm worried about that because that means the soil may be contaminated. It'll stick around till next year. So you have to be really careful about these tomato diseases that can permeate the soil,
Right.
And you're risking that by doing it year after year. But again, I put a lot of stuff in. Like when I plant my tomato plants, I put at least one fish or two into the hole.
One fish?
A fish. I go to my fishmonger. They know now that I bring them tomatoes in August because I go, I need a bag of fish, and they'll give me 80 fish. And I go, no, you don't get it.
This is very Native American.
I know. I need 20 fish. That's all I need.
And how big are these fish?
They're flounder. One whole flounder that's been
that's filleted. Big, like a pound?
More. Of them are huge. I'm out there with a cleaver and cutting them in half on a board.
That must drive the raccoons completely out of their minds.
They have showed up. That's why you got to bury them deep. They don't bother you. If you get them buried, they don't know, that they're there basically. But I'll tell you something. I have so many worms from all this stuff I'm doing that if you put a fish in that hole and you dig it back up in a week and a half, you can't find the fish.
Really?
They eat it so freaking fast. It's incredible. Wow. About 2 weeks, that fish is almost gone. You found a couple bones, and that's about it.
This is Digging in the Dirt. My guest today. Guest and host person is Kevin Gallagher. We're talking about his garden.
Yeah. I'm having a good time talking about it.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention about is the besides the pruning is the pinching too. I've learned a lot about pinching. They pinch the suckers on the plants too. That's another good thing to do. Pruning again is basically keeping a lot of airflow between the tomatoes, and you can force a lot of production. Same with I can't believe the cucumbers by pruning too. Another YouTube video on pruning cucumbers.
Yeah, so you've started actually sort of doing some variation on kind of a vertical garden, right?
A little bit, yeah, going up because I have no space. Yeah. And I'm a typical gardener who wants more.
Yeah.
I want more.
Which I think everybody's, right? Everybody gets in that.
Well, I've learned to do things like, I pulled my garlic, so I have this space where the garlic goes, and it's going back in there in the fall. But in the meantime, I threw in some zucchinis, and so they went in late, so I don't have zucchini yet, but I'm going to have them shortly.
Yeah.
And they're growing where the garlic was. So that I'm doing that. I'll sow Swiss chard amongst the tomatoes or, in between the beans, I have beans growing up one side of the beets. I guess I like fresh beets. They're really, so I have the red, red and golden beets are growing.
We actually just got some beets from the farm up in Easton the other day, and boy, yeah, that's kind of great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I didn't eat a beet until I was like in my 40s, I think.
Right.
I discovered them at a salad bar. I mean, I was horrified by beets when I was a kid.
Right.
And then I was at a salad bar in a restaurant. And I was like, I should try one of these. I was like, wow.
They're really sweet.
It was kind of great to find this new thing that I liked.
How do you cook them?
I don't. I mean, I don't really know how to.
I just roast them and then slice them and throw some balsamic vinegar on them with some goat cheese. That's a great salad.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Just peel them off after you roast them. You can roast them with a little olive oil and then a little salt and pepper and good olive oil and balsamic vinegar. I'm into white balsamic vinegar lately. I really like white.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's almost antithetical.
It is, but it's tasty as heck.
You know, is it sweet like the regular?
Yeah, it's not as cloying, I would say.
Is it thick?
Nope. It's very thin.
Because balsamic vinegar, I associate with being sort of thick.
Yeah, it's big in, it's a, we have, I was given a like a oil and vinegar kind of club for a present. So I got, this one I got turned on to it. I would get, once a month, I'd either get a bottle of vinegar or a bottle of oil from California.
And, vinegar of the month club. And
yeah, it's, that, that's what
send
it was. It was.
Midnight,
it's a great
tonight.
Gift, by the way. If anybody's listening and you're looking for a gift for somebody, they're all up on the shelf there, and I just pick a different one all the time, and they last forever.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Especially, I mean, how perfect for somebody who's into tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, because there's nothing like a little vinegar to pop the tomato. And I have for everybody. I'm going to pass a house secret here on where to get the best vinegar. I think. Fairway. I don't know if you have Fairways in...
There's one in Stanford.
There is? Okay. Go there and
125th Street one's easy on, easy off the West Side Highway. I know that.
Right. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200. Go straight to Fairway and buy some Lambrusco vinegar. It's in the vinegar section. They have all kinds there. And be careful. Make sure you're getting Lambrusco because they have another thing there, which is a sweetener. It's made from grapes, and it's really thick. And I bought it, and I thought I was buying my vinegar. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's an old Italian trick. They used to reduce like balsamic grapes, I guess, to a thick sauce that was like sweet. And they would sweeten instead of, they couldn't sweeten into tomato sauce, so they use that.
Oh.
They just put a swirl of that in and sweeten up the sauce a little bit. So that's what I use for it now instead of like some people use sugar, but I don't use sugar in the sauce. I use that. And the Lambrusco vinegar is the best one for tomatoes. Turned so many people onto that. And I could only find it at Fairway.
Ah.
So I like that a lot.
I now have a question I wanted to ask you. So do you every year test your soil? Do you?
Yeah. I have. I use Logan Labs to test my soil now. I didn't test it this year.
That's a serious lab, right?
Oh, yeah. Logan Labs would give you a test on everything that's in there. See, I go to the Bionutrient Food Association confab every year. I'll be there again. We'll probably have Dan Kittredge back on soon on Digging in the Dirt because they are so serious, these people at the Bionutrient Food Association. Talk about you want to learn how to tweak. And if you like, it's part of the tribe. It's the same kind of tribe as WPKN. Good people, serious about what they do, and it's not a cult or anything like that. It's just great people doing good things with farming and all kinds of things, you know, honey and all that kind of stuff. And I have learned so much from the Bionutrient Food Association because they are not interested in just organic food. They're interested in food that is nutrient. Because they, and they're right, believe that our soil is so depleted that the food does not get enough nutrition.
Yeah.
And so you
provide enough nutrition.
Yeah, exactly. All this corporate mass-produced food is really empty. So it looks good, but it doesn't necessarily taste good. I mean, and just because it's organic, it only means it's not killing you with chemicals. You know, it's not giving you anything you need. And you got to get that BRICS level up, and that's why you got to do all this stuff to your soil. It's the soil, you know, as they say.
It's the soil, stupid.
Without the soil, you got to remember, the plant doesn't have a stomach. It gets its nutrition from the soil. That's a simplistic way of saying it, but it does. It gets its nutrition from the soil. So you got to replenish the soil, and that's why you feed fairly often, because you know your soil is being depleted by the plants. The plants are saying, I need this, I need this. It keeps taking. Pretty soon the soil is depleted, and that's why the majority of the soil in the world is depleted. It's very empty calories when you're putting chemical fertilizers on there. It's not doing the job of replenishing the soil, and that's what you want to do. You want to get to the point where your soil is taking care of you. You know, you have lots of worms. You're throwing lots of compost in there. Don't be afraid with compost. You don't have to have it perfect. You know, if you're making compost and it's still got a piece of avocado over here and a piece of whatever, don't worry about it. Just dig a hole and bury it. You know,
right.
And the worms will come and eat it and make it into poop, and they'll grow, and your plants will be happy. And you know, and keep everything covered, because when you dry everything out, these are those small rules that you just have to do. Keep everything covered. You know, especially your garden, make sure it has straw, stuff like that, you know, and you'll see amazing results. Your plants will be much happier, and you'll be pest-free, too.
Yeah, that's one thing a couple of things I started taking seriously in the last couple of years, and I'm not growing vegetables, I'm mostly just growing flowers. And if you went and looked at my garden right now, it's not looking that good.
We're radio.
But, yeah. But it was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it was so much better this year as a result of adding compost to it, about really not kind of worrying too much about cleaning out all the crap out of the garden at the end of the year. You know, just keeping like a layer of stuff on there. And even sort of, pushing leaves and stuff into the garden, you know, so that they would,
it all breaks down.
Yeah.
It's just like a forest, you know. It all breaks down there. It's all about decomposition, and everything grows from the decomposed materials. That's why I buzz my kitchen stuff in and throw it in with the worms, because you're already the first decomposer, basically. If you can break it down a little bit more for them, you're going to get it quicker back. You know, you're going to get the results back, and you can use it in your garden. But yeah, you could, if anything, suck up the leaves and break them down, you know, mulch them and put them back into the garden, you know.
Yeah.
Is taking them all away and having the perfect lawn and all that stuff is, we got to get out of that habit, I think, you know, and try to, you know, and growing something gives you a lot of satisfaction.
It'd be kind of great, actually, I think, if there were some device that was more effective about and easier to use for mulching up stuff from your lawn, like leaves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have the same thought. You know,
there are those chippers, but I'm not going to spend $500 on some piece.
You know, I agree with you. I've looked for them, and I said somebody is missing an opportunity here. They could make a small little composting kind of thing that just buzzes up all your leaves and small vegetation and lets you use it again. And that's an invention waiting to happen.
I'm almost thinking like some kind of a dock that you push your lawnmower into, you know?
Yeah, could be, yeah. Right? I don't know. I'm not that kind of guy. I grow tomatoes. Somebody should make a composter and I'll buy it.
Yeah, right. Right, because, I always want to do that, but it's not so easy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Well, I've had a good time doing this with you, Pete.
Yeah, it's really been fun.
Yeah, if people want to contact me, you can get me at kevin.wpkn@gmail. That's kevin.wpkn@gmail. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to help you out, you know, with these fertilizers I mentioned and stuff like that. You know, it's really important to have things that I'm not the kind who's going to make a lot of things from scratch, you know, so I like to have some things that help me, you know, like bugs in a jug, you know, that help the probiotics of the soil and different kinds of good fertilizers, so lots of good stuff out there.
And to access all the Digging in the Dirt podcasts, of which you have how many up there now?
There's 75.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some really good information. I'm really proud of those podcasts. There's a lot of good information in there. And you
get some amazing guests.
Yeah, there's some really
notable experts in their field.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun. You know, I'm constantly on the lookout for different ones, and you know, I've had very few that are not interesting. You know, like you know, but there's a lot of them just come up with. They have some good information for you. You know, and they teach you a lot about what we're doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad we did this.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, maybe let's do it again. We'll do it next summer or maybe at the end of the season.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Kevin. Digging in the dirt.